We have one more item on the agenda, and that's also an information item, item Z, Judicial Branch Administration. This is the California State Auditor Report, Armed Persons with Mental Illness. We welcome Shelley Curran and John Jednick.
Probably thought she had another hour. What? Say we'll do that. But also.
Thank you, Chief. Council members. Shelley might be here momentarily.
I saw Shelley earlier.
Here.
I saw her earlier.
I have a very strict liaison.
I saw that.
Good morning, Chief, and members of the Judicial Council. I'm Shelley Curran, and I'm here today with my colleague, Mr. John Jednick, to speak to you about a Bureau of State Audits report that came out in October 2013 entitled Armed Persons with Mental Illness, Insufficient Outreach from the Department of Justice, and Poor Reporting from the Superior Courts Limit the Identification of Armed Persons with Mental Illness. So essentially, the report details the trial court's compliance with reporting requirements related to the identification of armed persons with mental illness. When it was released, the audit received significant media attention. So what we're going to talk about today are quickly outline the existing reporting requirements that were touched on in this audit, provide an overview of the state audit reports, including the recent passage of some legislation that deals with this issue, and then speak very briefly about some of the efforts that the Administrative Office of the Courts is undertaking in response to this and other reporting requirements related to firearms. Excuse me, I'm a little bit out of breath from rushing in here. Pursuant to Welfare and Institutions Code 8103, 5300, and 6500, superior courts must report certain mental health determinations to the Department of Justice for the purpose of identifying individuals who are prohibited from owning or possessing firearms because of a mental health determination. Some of these determinations include things like that the person is a danger to others or themselves as a result of a mental disorder, which that results in a court order commitment to a treatment facility, things like not guilty by reason of insanity or incompetent to stand trial. There are multiple ways that the courts report this information to the Department of Justice. In criminal proceedings, courts have two ways of reporting. One is through an electronic system at the Department of Justice. A second is actually manually. In regards to civil determinations, at this point, the courts can only report to the Department of Justice manually. Legislation was passed this past year that provides for electronic reporting in civil matters to the Department of Justice, but the Department of Justice has informed us that they're not going to be ready with this electronic system until at least 2015. In short, the audit concluded that the Department of Justice didn't sufficiently inform the trial courts of this obligation under the law, and that many of the surveyed courts did not comply with the reporting requirements, and in fact, many of the courts were not aware of the reporting requirements. Specifically, the state auditor looked at 34 courts and visited three courts, Los Angeles, Santa Clara, and San Bernardino. They found that DOJ hadn't reached out effectively to these courts to inform them. Generally, courts were better at reporting in criminal cases than they were civil cases. And none of the three courts that were visited by the state auditor fully complied with all of the requirements. And another thing that the DOJ realized, the Bureau of State Audits realized in this audit, is that many courts were interpreting the term immediately differently. In statute, courts are required to report this information immediately, and they got varied responses to immediately. One catalyst as a finding of this is that legislation was introduced last year, AB 1131, that included a provision that defined immediately, and that now means 2 court days that the courts have to provide this information to the Department of Justice, and the council took a support position on that provision in the bill. The audit recommendations that were included in the report that impact the courts require the AOC to work more closely, or ask that the AOC work more closely with the Department of Justice in order to help the trial courts comply with this, and we've continued to do that. And another important thing that we should point out is that they have suggested that the reporting requirement be changed from 48 hours to 24 hours, and that's something that we have said would be virtually impossible for the courts to do given resources. Mental health facilities have an electronic system. They're also staffed 24 hours a day, and so they are able to do this within 24 hours, but for the trial courts, that would be very difficult. Since the audit has come out, the AOC has worked with the chair of the trial court, presiding judge's advisory committee, and the court executive's advisory committee to inform the trial courts of these requirements. Department of Justice has updated their forms, and they disseminated those to the courts at the end of August of this year. My office has received over 22, we stopped counting at when we hit 22, calls and inquiries from the trial courts that we've been working with them in order to help them meet these reporting requirements. CJR has a video up on Saranis that includes information on these reporting requirements, and they also have been working with the probate law curriculum committee and the criminal law curriculum committee to figure out how to incorporate this information into those programs. Additionally, my office is undertaking a comprehensive review of all of the firearms reporting requirements, and we'll disseminate that to the trial courts once we've been able to do that. And finally, on Monday, there's a hearing sponsored by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on this reporting, on this audit, and I will be there along with Mr. David Yamasaki as chair of the court's executive advisory committee. So with that, I'll turn it over to John for any additional thoughts.
Well, thank you, Shelley. Just a few comments. This report from the California State Auditor came out. It obviously deals with accountability, efficiency, and resource issues, and therefore went to the Accountability and Efficiency Committee of the Council, chaired by Justice Huffman. That recommendation was to present it to this committee, to the Council, to inform the Council as to, you know, what was going on with the California State Auditor. The response to the audit signed by Judge Jarr indicated, as Shelley stated previously, that the shorter deadline is not recommended. The Bureau of State Audits, now known as California State Auditor, will be recommending a change in legislation. That is part of the purpose of the hearing on Monday. Part of the response indicated that, again, that with the unprecedented budget cuts that affected the branch, there are resource issues here. And those resource issues also take into account the lack of electronic reporting capabilities statewide at the current moment that the state auditor has indicated that they are considering. With that, that concludes this. I know I talked to Mr. Yamasaki about this, and he will be attending Monday's meeting.
Yeah, if I could, Chief. This issue is clearly an important one, and we, as courts, have an obligation to comply with the statute. The challenge, however, that we have is the process that we have to undertake in order to make those reports timely. And one of the reasons why there is a little bit of inconsistency in interpretation of what immediate means is really as it fits within the resources that we have. We're extremely challenged. And just looking at the findings for Santa Clara, we had a error rate, I think, of about 24%. Well, it just so happens our vacancy rate is 24%. So there's a direct relationship between resources and, you know, the errors that we did uncover. Notwithstanding that, we understand that we have to do a better job at reporting it. It's extremely difficult. It's not just reporting it. We undergo a process of evaluation to ensure that the report is accurate. So we have to undergo that step. But I just heard for the first time today that one of the recommendations is that the statute be changed to a 24-hour report time. And I will be the first to say there is no way we can comply with that. We rely upon technology to make expeditious reports. There is no technology in many of the areas that we have this requirement. And I am expecting to make a similar acknowledgement on Monday, but I'm hopeful that they understand where we are. It's an important issue, as I say, but we can only do so much with the resources that we have. And I don't know, maybe this is a complaint, but I think in speaking with my colleagues around the state, we share a similar concern about this potential new requirement that we're going to be facing.
Thank you, David. Judge O'Malley and then Judge Walsh.
So, Shelley, I have just a question and then a follow-up comment. So the Department of Justice is not ready to receive this information electronically until 2015 and need it manually submitted till that time. And 2015 might not be hard, you know, either as far as the end date. And by manually, is this our clerks sending a form, not clicking information into a computer, but manually mailing off part of the document that they've sent us back up to them to be read, you know, the envelope opened, read, and then submitted into their data?
Yeah, the in criminal cases right now, there are two ways for the information to get to the DOJ. One is electronically right. through a system that they have, and then manually is the other. Civil commitments, it's only manually. And my understanding of manually is literally a form.
Okay, so to have that done within 24 hours is extremely unreasonable. Even submitting the information into a computer to input all that necessary data within 24 hours of a judgment of a calendar that was probably anywhere from 70 to 120 matters on it is unreasonable. So I'm glad to hear that the department is willing, at least I thought I heard, that they're willing to change it back to at least the 48, because that is... No?
The 48 is what's in statute effective January 1. The
right.
24 hours is a recommendation that the Bureau of State Audits has. We don't know how the legislature is going to act, but the fact that they just decided that 48 hours is the right answer, I would be surprised if at this point they turned around and moved up to 24 hours when we haven't even had a chance to comply within 48.
Well, and you have to worry because obviously there's all these shootings, and
right.
so they're going to think faster is better. However, faster is not doable, especially when the information, the only way we can give this information to them within the next year and a half or so, or maybe longer, is manually. It's just we don't have the staff. We're already down, you know, many of our courts are down 30% of our court staff, and we're barely getting through the filings and the inputting of the information into our own computer systems so that somebody can get out of jail in time because they've completed a sentence, you know, to make sure that they're not held for more days. So there are many timely things that we need to get done as soon as possible, and to fill out a form and send it off to the DOJ within that amount of time is not reasonable. But otherwise, thanks for the update, and again,
Yeah, and we'll make that. We will clearly make that point on Monday, especially in the context of, you know, courts and judges are not interested in people who have mental illness who are not supposed to have firearms from having firearms. It's not coming from a position of not wanting to do this. It really is a practical matter. Courts don't have the staff to do it in that time.
Judge O'Malley also has a point in the report itself. The report acknowledged that the Department of Justice is receiving a lot of manual reports, and they're significantly backlogged on entering into their system.
No. Judge Walsh.
I love it. What a system. Thank you, Chief. First of all, on behalf of the PJs, yes, we have brought this report to their attention. I'm sure they're on it. We will follow up again at our annual meeting. But I did want to mention, because our court, Santa Clara, is one of the courts that had the honor of being closely scrutinized here. And first of all, I want to thank my able CEO. He's the one who's going to testify on Monday, not his PJ. So that's as good as they get, right? Thank you for that, David. But I want to say... The DOJ didn't reach out, but it's still our responsibility, and we get that. And we want perfection. They looked at 30 of our cases. We got 22 right on 8 we didn't report. We want 30 out of 30, and we'll get there. and it's our responsibility, and we'll take that responsibility. And David and his team have already put in place procedures to correct that, and we expect we'll be 30 out of 30 right now. But as David pointed out, it is a coincidence, perhaps, that the error rate mirrors our vacancy rate. This ongoing notion that somehow we can do perfection while we're woefully underfunded, somebody, at least some other city than ours, has to get real about that. It should not be a surprise that a woefully underfunded judicial system will, on occasion, not fully meet its responsibility to the people it serves. We can get there if we can get the resources. But in the meantime, Santa Clara County, and I'm sure the entire state, will try for perfection even though we're underfunded.
Thank you, Judge Walsh. Mark, was that a hand up?
No, I was just sort of giving up hand to Judge Jarrett.
Thank you. Judge D'Alba.
Thank you, Chief. Just a comment generally on the question of firearms and prohibitions and reporting to the Department of Justice. We've done pretty good with DV, I think the courts and the law enforcement community, with respect to firearms restrictions and reporting. There was a time about 10 years or 12 or 15 years ago when the DV situation was much like the 5150 situation or the conservatorship situations are now, where there's complete absence of reporting. I saw the report where 29 out of 34 courts didn't even realize they had these reporting obligations. I have, for the last 6 or 7 years in my county, been the firearms prohibition judge. I entertain a calendar 3 times a month where I have to make determinations about people who have previously been already committed as 5150 or 5152 or whatever it be, whether to restore their firearm privileges. And I have to say, on a positive note, with respect to this entire area of prohibition and notifying the authorities and the police and all the like, that most of these folks who have these types of infirmities, when they initially have contact with a mental health facility or with law enforcement, it's my view and impression and experience that those agencies and departments are adequately reporting to DOJ. So if you're committed on the front end, the Department of Justice, much like an arrest, that's recorded and the entire law enforcement community or mental health community knows about it. Now they come to court for whatever reason, criminal proceeding or civil proceeding or what I entertain, or many courts in every county has to entertain. I don't know how it's done throughout the state. That is, making determinations about whether to reinstate or restore firearm privileges to people who have this history. And given the tragedies that have happened around our nation with firearms and persons who have these mental instabilities, I suggest that, as has been said, that courts and judges and staff throughout our state need some intense education on this very potentially tragic, explosive subject matter of judges and courts making determinations of who should have firearms or who shouldn't have firearms and our reporting obligations. I mean, I saw in this report that some counties routinely make determinations that somebody is so disabled or gravely disabled and make a determination of a conservatorship but issue no order about a firearms restriction to someone who's completely unable to make decisions for themselves. Obviously, that's not good. So it's just observation, and I don't know if that lies with seizure or maybe by educating the legislature that we need resources to educate judges in 58 counties. I know that in the 6 or 7 years that I've been doing this, I can't find any resource that informs or educates me as a judge trying to wrestle with these types of determinations about process or standards, other than the Welfare and Institutions Code sections 8103, 05, 07, about reporting, standards, process, etc. So just an observation.
Thank you, Judge D'Alba. I don't see any further questions. We thank you for pursuing this, and we appreciate your work and the training that will follow.
Thank you.
Well, we conclude today's Judicial Council meeting, as we often do, unfortunately, with a brief remembrance of our judicial colleagues who have recently passed. And we have Judge Nancy Brown, Superior Court of Los Angeles County, and Judge Robert Zarek, Superior Court of Sacramento County. Both are retired from the bench, and as always, we honor them for their service to the courts and their dedication to the acts, to the cause of justice. The next regularly scheduled business meeting of the Judicial
Chief,
Council. Yes.
Could I add two names to that list?
Yes, most recently. Go ahead.
These were very recent justices who were departed. Justice M.O. Sabra from the First District Court of Appeal. And also just this past Monday, Justice John Gabbert from the 4th District Division 2 at the age of 104.
Thank you. And I also think Judge Gallagher, also a retired justice, a judge who's been serving in Northern California as well. Sacramento, I remember. All were retired, and we all thank them for their service. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Judge D'Alba. And as I was saying, the next regularly scheduled meeting is January in Sacramento, January 23rd. Happy and safe holidays.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're awesome. We're adjourned.